Hey, everybody, and welcome to Learning from Smart People. I am your host, Rob Oliver, and I don't quite have like a trumpet fanfare or anything appropriate for this announcement, but welcome to episode 100. I can absolutely not believe that we have it. I mean, we are now almost a full year into learning from smart people. There have been so many smart people on here. I have learned so much. It has been absolutely a fantastic journey. I would like to say that it is my guests have made this fantastic. The audience has made this fantastic, and I just get to be along for the ride. So thank you for being here. Thank you for listening. And thank you for just making this such a rewarding experience for me. My guest today is Shabnam Curtis, and she is the author of My Persian Paradox. She was born and raised in Tehran, experiencing the Iranian Revolution of 1979 firsthand. She is working on her second memoir, which is the sequel, as well as some storytelling workshops. Her motto is, "We all have a story to tell. Share your story, listen to others' stories, and create more empathy and love." Shabnam, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so much. Thanks, Rob. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So I was just absolutely intrigued by your story. Let me just say this. From my perspective, I'm dealing with, you know, certain disability. I have a disability. I'm dealing with limitations. I'm dealing with barriers and obstacles. And I see that from a physical perspective. I see other people dealing with difficulties and barriers and obstacles and their external circumstances. And so for you, I read a couple of the blurbs on your website, and your story is amazing. So rather than me try and tell your story for you, let's just start with what is the backstory and kind of the background of how your story starts.
Of course, of course. Thank you. Yeah, you nailed it. You know, it's either our physical or the external barriers that usually makes us want more from life. And it motivates us for wanting more, having more, and trying for more, or push our limitations. Like you mentioned, I was born and raised in Iran. I was almost 7 years old, a little girl, didn't understand what was happening, but the revolution happened. And I was brought up with very polarity in my family. In my small family, my mother was kind of like a traditional young woman and pretty conservative, you know. And my father was, his beliefs was like communism and socialism, very drastically different. I didn't know what was going on. And at the time of the revolution, my parents were actually getting divorced. My mother and I, with my uncle's support, my mother's brother, we were kind of like on our way to America. But everything changed. Everything happened because my uncle's wife, she was American at the time, living in Iran. And they started getting threatened to, like, "We are coming to burn your house, to kill your American wife." The fundamentalists, the Islamic fundamentalists, they were threatening them. So they had to leave overnight. And my mother lost the support that she had, you know. Her only way, basically, in that upheaval was just going back to my father. Basically, the whole story of her life changed. And then everyone was surprised, you know. The revolution started with revolution for freedom, for better economy. I was very little. People didn't want to have basically like other countries controlling their economy, because Iran is such a rich country with a lot of oil and gas and mines. They wanted to have their own control over the economy, but that's exactly what didn't happen. over the couple of years right after the revolution, who had the power was were the fundamentalists, like the Islamic fundamentalists. They took the power, they changed the constitution, and basically whatever everyone had fought for to change the constitution under the Shah's regime, it all changed to Sharia law. So basically, women lost all their rights. As I want to say, like, as simple as a mother didn't have the right to have her child or her children at the event of divorce. Like, the father is the sole custody. And then the war happened, the war between Iran and Iraq, 8 years of war. It was just so many millions of people were killed for no reason. But it was because basically mainly because the regime could have more control over people, so they just continued the war. And then, of course, I'm growing up, I become a teenager, and as a teenager, I face all these limitations in the society that, like, I can't wear what I want. I have a nail polish and I get arrested. Or I walk with a boyfriend and I get arrested. It's just like, it seems like little silly things, but it's so deep in your private life that it's like you have no control over your life. And I want to add that my parents' relationship didn't get better. It got worse, of course.
Okay, they got divorced, and that was a pretty good indicator that things were pretty bad. And yeah, and then from there it gets worse. So, here you are, you're a teenager, and your parents are, living in the same house, but that's got to be a major impact on what you're seeing, even going on in your own home.
Exactly. You got it. Yes. So it wasn't only the pressure from outside that we had to be a very different person outside. Even inside the house, we had so much going on, so much tension that I wanted to escape. And believe it or not, I tell this to everybody, everyone laughs. I thought marriage is giving me freedom.
Okay.
So kind of like a semi-half arranged marriage because my mother was very eager about this young boy, but my father, of course, was very against it. I thought, well, I'm gonna get married because if I go out with him, they just arrest me, right? I can't just do anything I want. So maybe marriage is the way to get out. And then from my parents' pressure and the society pressure, I get married at 19, feeling that I'm gonna build this road of independence.
Right.
And sure enough, before I know, I was pregnant and everything got worse because my husband was very controlling.
Right. Wow. So, I mean, here's what I'm feeling is kind of that sense of there's enormous pressure on you from outside of this is what you can do and this is what you can't do, and we won't allow you to do this, and you can't even think about doing that. And I mean, for me, it's a little bit the same that sometimes I look and there's people and they look at me and they, based on disability, they think you can't do this and you can't do that, and like don't even try to do this. And so it's not exactly the same, but it's one of those things. So many times here in America, there is still that expectation that people say you can do this and you can't do that. The good news for me is I say, okay, I don't care what you think, I'm going to go ahead and do it. The bad news is that in Iran, if you say I don't care what you think, then you end up getting arrested and going to jail. So it happens in both places, and yet thankfully we've got the opportunity here to do what we need to. So you're 19, you're pregnant, you give birth to a daughter, and how do you end up from that point getting out of Iran and getting over here to the States?
That was the point. That was the turning point, the pivot point when I wasn't ready to become a mother, and I became a mother of a daughter. So now it's me and my daughter, two women that we see no future for ourselves, right? I knew that I had to find a way. I was having very difficult time with going to college. But and divorce was a taboo. But I managed to get divorced with my parents' support. That's what actually brought all of us together in a very different way. Because of my daughter, because of the future that we wanted for her, my parents actually really supported me at that point. And then I got to build a professional job, save a little bit money. And then I got to know another gentleman, and he was on his way to America. So, long story short, I got married to him because I saw that way, that was the way out. America was the impossible. I could do, I could try for Australia, I could try for Canada, and they were possible, but America was impossible. So if he was on his way to America, I was like, I'm gonna go with him. And I know it's this story of many, many people because you want to find a way out. Now, I had to sacrifice. I made the wrong decisions. I ended up not having my daughter with me for a few years. It was painful. But now that I see she's an independent woman here in America, I think it was worth it.
Wonderful. So your story is fascinating, but I'd like to kind of pivot a little bit to say, what was it that gave you the idea to say, okay, I've been through this. Now I want to share my story. What was it that kind of gave you the push to share your story?
I love that question. It's amazing because when I was a new immigrant, I was busy, especially because I actually had to go through another divorce because that other gentleman was also another controlling person that I wasn't able to do or to develop my life. And obviously, I was also not a very secure person. Growing up and under a lot of pressure, I was also having all the wrong attachments to people, especially romantically, right? But then I also wanted to build a career for myself. I didn't want to stay in the retail and just do a minimum wage job. I had big dreams. I wanted to be independent financially, or overall, I wanted to be independent. So I worked hard. I was just running for 7 years. And it was like, my daughter got here. I got to build a good career, a new, and I was in a new relationship, working very well. We had a cute little house, but very comfortable, and we loved it and everything. So you would call it the American dream. I reached the American dream, right? But then I found a hole in my heart. And I was like, what is wrong with me? I have everything I've wished for, and I'm just not feeling satisfied. What is wrong with me? I was guilty. I felt really guilty. But then I started soul searching. I dig down, and I noticed every time I shared a little bit of my story from past with friends, I felt a little better. And then I was like, I find these universal experiences between me and other people. And I also see that I wasn't the only one. So I ended up like looking at my past in a different way. And at the same time, people were like, oh my God, I had no idea people live like this in Iran. And I was like, well, there are so many aspects to it. I want to write this story. I want to share this story. Not because I was or I've been an extraordinary person, because I've been an ordinary person who had no voice and wanted to share that story of us ordinary people.
I understand exactly what you're talking about because with my circumstance, I wrote my story. I shared what had happened with me. I shared about my injury, the rehab process, all of that. And what you and I have in common is this: our story is unique to us, but the things that we learn and the things that are demonstrated in that story are things that are universal and really correspond to what goes on with everybody in the world. Is that something then that you're able to teach other people when you're doing your workshops and those kind of things? Is that a lesson that you're able to share as well?
Yeah, you know, usually when I have a workshop, I focus on four different dimensions of a story. And well, first of all, I appreciate when people want to share their stories, because the more we share our stories, the more authentic we are. You know, we are not ashamed of that past identity, because we see why it happened and what happened and how everything had so much impact that it wasn't me making so many mistakes. Yes, I take responsibility for the mistakes I made, but I see it in a broader view. So I appreciate when people come to share their stories in a workshop. And then when we try to build up their stories, I ask these questions. I was like, what was the situation of the society? What culture did you live in? What were the forbidden things in that culture that you had to do to fit in, or you didn't like to do, or you didn't do? Or what was the state of mind? Were you under a lot of pressure when that story happened? Or, you know, were you like a student who worked two jobs and didn't have, like, were sleep deprived and didn't have even a physical or mental relaxing time? You know, so many things that could actually help people to see their narrative differently and kind of like put it in a bigger picture, put it in perspective that, oh, I could actually look at my story differently. I could forgive myself. I could forgive others, because now I see what was the background. I can't just easily say, oh, my ex-husband was controlling. But why was he controlling? Did he grow up in that same culture that was male dominant? And if he wasn't controlling, then he would be put down by his friends and family members. So he had to do it to be accepted. You know, it's like, not that I would accept those flaws, but I see them. And in my workshop, I try to help other people to see the flaws differently, with compassion, with empathy, to understand what happened to them and to others and why we did what we did.
I really like what you just said there. It's not just about our stories, aren't just about ourselves. It's about the other people in the story. And so rather than just looking at yourself as a victim, you know, say this, my husband, he was controlling, he was this and he was that, you're looking at it to say, okay, what brought him to where he was in the story, and what can we learn about that? And rather than it being a story of all of the bad things that happened, it's a story that celebrates the goodness. And also, as you said, it has an understanding of the other characters in the story and where they're coming from, and doesn't necessarily just paint them as a stereotypical, like they were a bad person. Like that, that's a really powerful message for anybody that's sharing a story.
Yes, yes, I agree exactly. Yeah, exactly what you said. You know, yes, it becomes a story of resilience. It helps us not only to see the narrative of our story differently, that you, like you said, we weren't a victim. We were actually playing a role in this whole dynamic. And we also made changes that if we don't look at it that way, we won't realize those changes that we've made. We see the self-worth of us. We forgive us and other people in a different way. And also, when it becomes for decision for future, then we just have reached our inner power that I've made those changes. I've got out of those events and troubles. Now I can do more. I can push more of my limits.
Yeah, I'm just processing this in my mind, and here's kind of what I'm thinking about, okay? And that is, when we view ourselves as a victim, we look at what happened to us, and we can go over those circumstances, but the longer we dwell on what happened to us, the more we just are stuck at that point of what happened. Whereas what you're talking about is looking at the decisions that you've made, looking at the choices that you made, and looking at what you've done to move forward from what happened to you. And that really is what frees you up to become resilient, to become, you know, I don't know if an overcomer is the right word, but it changes the narrative of your story to say, instead of it all being about the bad things that happened, it's about how you take those things, you deal with them, and then you come out on the other side as a stronger person, as a person with more understanding. And you used a word that I thought was really valuable and important, as a person with more compassion. That's a beautiful thing. How do you develop that ability to be compassionate to others, especially when you're looking at someone who, to use your husband as an example, who is controlling in your life and who is someone that you realized you can't spend the rest of your life with, but to say, okay, I still am going to have compassion on a compassionate viewpoint towards him. How do you do that?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I think storytelling, usually an effective way of storytelling, the way that we are talking about it now, to look at your narrative differently, like you said, frees up so many capacities in ourselves that instead of just focusing on me, I now have more energy to focus on how can I serve others? How can I be a better person? And the way that I see it, let's say, like, go back to the example that you just mentioned, I just see how all the pressure that he had through his childhood, the parents that, the tension that his parents had, and then the pressure that the society put on him. Honestly, if he wouldn't be a controlling person, if he wouldn't do what he did to basically control his wife, then he would be getting shame from people around him that, like, oh, you are just a very weak man. You cannot manage your wife.
Right.
Because he would get shame, he had to do it. And I've done it, and I see everybody's done it. When we are in under that pressure, peer pressure, and cultural norms, and want to fit in because we don't know better, we want to be accepted by that, you know, narrow-minded kind of like limited society, we just become selfish. And I see why and how we can become selfish.
Yeah. And really, I think that in today's society, what we are facing is a lot of folks who have turned inward. And as we turn inward, we have that self-focus, and it allows us to, when we're focused on ourselves, we see so much of what we don't have. We see so much of, you know, just, we dwell in a place of lack and emptiness. But you're talking about turning that around, about sharing stories, about looking for ways, you said this, looking for ways that you can serve others. And when you are turned inward, it turns you necessarily away from other people. But as you turn that around and turn it outward, it is something that turns you towards other people and towards relationships. And can you just talk about a little bit of the ways of how that has an impact on our lives and on our relationships, and as a bigger picture, even how it would have an impact on our society?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, you just said it beautifully. You know, one thing that for me was a really breakthrough was I used to take a lot of things personally because I didn't know people's stories, and I thought whatever they did was something pointed at me. And that sounds like selfish when I look at it now. And I, now that I know people's stories, Even those people that I don't know their stories, I can see that, oh, there is a story. That's why he couldn't say nice things to me. That's why she couldn't respond the way she should have. That's why he wasn't a good team member. But not because they wanted to victimize me personally. It's because they have stories to tell that is not shared, and I don't know, but they are preoccupied with their own story. So I started taking it less and less and less personally. And like you mentioned, the word compassion, that's when you really feel it because you don't judge people anymore.
Yeah, that's got to be a beautiful place to live, because you're not worried, you're not comparing yourself to others, you're not being victimized by others, you're having some understanding, and you're in a place where, listen, people do things, they have reasons for doing things. The reasons why they do things may happen to be what happened to them. And I think it's kind of that thing where people do things, and it's like, if I knew their story, maybe knowing their story would help me understand them better. And in that way, I think it's a valuable thing for it's not just, as you said, it's not just about telling your story. It's about listening to other people's stories as well. That, listen, Shabnam, this has been wonderful. If people are looking to get more information about you, where can they find you? What's the best place?
Oh, thank you so much. Oh, I enjoyed every minute of this conversation. I appreciate it, Rob. You know, if you search Shabnam Curtis, I think that's the only one come up in Google. My website is mypersianparadox.com, and my blog is shabnamcurtis.com. I'm also in Instagram, shabnam_curtis. Facebook, I mean, you know, these days we have an account everywhere.
Well, I'll put the link to both of the websites and to all your social media. I'll put those down in the show notes so that people can connect with you there. You have made a very generous offer to give away some books. And
Course.
so here's what I'm going to do. I am going to anyone who comments on this video or comments on Twitter, Facebook, anywhere that we post about this video, on our website, I will take all of those comments and we will randomly select it. How many can I select?
You know, I'm now very excited. Let's go with 10.
Okay. I will select 10 comments, and those 10 people, we will send them a book. That is fantastic. So that is so generous of you. I am excited about that. And so all of my listeners, get on here, make some comments, and we'll go from there. So Shabnam, thank you. And it is time for three questions to establish your humanity. Are you ready for this?
Yes.
What is something that will make you laugh?
I like to laugh at people. So when people no, okay. Now I like to laugh with people. Sorry.
Big difference there.
I don't like to laugh at people. Sorry about that.
No problem.
I think I'm pretty easy to make laugh. You know, like a good conversation like this, or even sometimes critiquing a system, as long as we don't shame other people, I can easily bring up. I don't have a very good sense of humor, but either me or other people, if we bring up the issues with a system with some sense of humor, I can just easily laugh. And that's really like that's the type of laugh that makes me energetic.
Got it. What is something that we have here in America that you didn't realize that we had when you came, when you were coming over? Something that we've got, and you realize how valuable it is, but it wasn't part of your dream of freedom when you were envisioning coming to America.
Should I say cicadas? No.
Yeah, definitely not.
that has been really very touching for me is how racism is politicized here. And I, as a person who was raised with a lot of discrimination, I kind of like sensed and felt discrimination with every cell of my body growing up. But I understood the depth of racism when I actually came to America. It's politicized very much, but at the same time, there is a reason for it. What I didn't expect was the power of diversity, and how people actually can be very resilient despite the difficult past, and believe in their self-worth.
Okay.
It was very, very inspiring to me.
That's beautiful. All right, the last question. Why is it that there are no Iranian restaurants? Or maybe there are, and I'm just not aware of them. What is Iranian cooking? And is it something? Do you think there should be Iranian restaurants, or are they just out there and I don't know where they are?
You know, actually, it depends on where you live, because there are in big cities, there are restaurants that they offer Persian cuisine, usually managed with Iranian people. I live close to Washington, D.C., and there are several good restaurants here. But if you go a little bit further out in the north to Maryland or West Virginia or South Virginia, you don't see any. You are right. So there are just a few big cities, but I want to say in Los Angeles, there is part of Westwood that is a very long street in Los Angeles. Part of it is called Terangeles.
Wow.
So, and there are restaurants there that you can definitely enjoy Persian cuisine. Of course, the signature is kebab. All different types of kebab, beef, lamb, and chicken, and even fish kebab. But there are stews that many, many people like. Usually actually here in Washington, D.C. area, we have a fast food house of kebab called Moby Dick.
Okay.
Now, I don't know the history behind it, but it's a very successful fast food, and you usually see more non-Iranian people in it than Iranian. It's very successful. So I hope you get to try it, and I hope you like it.
Excellent. Well, next time I'm in DC, I will make sure that I try it out, because it sounds fascinating. Listen, Shabnam Curtis, thank you so much for being here today. It has been an absolute pleasure, and your story is fascinating, and your work in storytelling has been just great to think about, and you certainly are smart, and I have certainly learned from you. So thank you for being here. To all my listeners, thank you for helping us get to 100. And it is my pleasure to share these wonderful guests with you. And as always, I will remind you of this, that when you stop learning, you stop living. Have a great day, everybody.